Our podcast will begin in just a moment. Our podcast production and distribution made possible every day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. 7 things to know about 529 plans. What men can learn from women about investing. These are talking points from recent Invest Talks, and you can hear them again or for the first time on investtalk.com. Just click on the Invest Talk tab on investtalk.com. And now, today's Invest Talk podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our June 29th, 2016 edition of Invest Talk, and we are all about helping you rise above the ranks of the average investor who tends to make poor decisions. And we're trying to give you some perspective and some knowledge and answers to your questions each and every weekday, and help you not make the same mistakes that most other people make. Okay, so we're trying to give you some perspective to your investing experience. Whether you're a beginner, new, or you're been doing it for decades and you're maybe more advanced and you understand the complexities of the market, you can always be learning more. I know I'm always learning more. So never think that this job is done, okay? Now with Brexit shaking up the markets and messing with investors' heads, there's a lot of questions that you might have trouble finding a good answer for. And these changes can settle in at various times. You know, we've had a snapback in markets, and that's a good thing in the short term. But does that mean that snapback is going to hold? What about international stocks? Is this a buying opportunity? What about the dollar? U.S. Treasury bonds, gold. Should this change in the landscape affect your decision making? Change the percentage of foreign stocks in your portfolio, maybe? Now, in normal times, investing overseas carries a higher risk than investing in the U.S. However, allocating a portion of your portfolio to international stocks is a great way to lower your overall risk of your portfolio. Now, that might sound weird. You're saying, well, typically, investing overseas is higher risk. But then I'm saying if you add it to your portfolio, it generally lowers the overall risk of your portfolio. Do you understand how that works? You understand why? It's all about diversification. When one zigs, the other can zag. Now, they zig together sometimes and zag together. But the currency risk can work in your favor sometimes and not in your favor. And when it works in your favor, a lot of times that means your domestic stocks are not doing so hot. So foreign stocks can outperform. Doesn't mean they don't go down. Maybe they go down less. They just don't have the same correlation, generally, as the S&P, the overall market, or domestic market. So the question is, how much of your portfolio should be in international stocks right now? Well, I think a lot of that depends on what sectors, what areas. European stocks, probably not. Asian regions, I would say, yeah, there are some good countries out there that you should have exposure to. South America, yeah, I think things are pretty depressed and cheap down there. So there's opportunities there. That also relates to how much risk you want to take. Are you a conservative investor? Well, you should probably have a small allocation in international stocks. And all those international stocks should probably be big blue chip dividend paying stocks. If you're more aggressive, might be a much higher percentage. Now, how do you invest overseas? Well, one way is through American Depository Receipts, ADRs. It's basically a fund holding the stock of a foreign company. They're cost effective. They're easy. You buy them just like a normal stock generally. They're a little bit less liquid. The dividends that you're getting are subject to foreign tax withholdings. So understand that. So there are risks that investors must understand when investing in ADRs and thus foreign companies. There's political risk. You've seen that with Brexit. How stable is the government? Could they have a military coup? There's exchange rate risks. Currency fluctuations. Once again, Brexit. So it's not one or the other. One can cause the other. Usually currency risk has to do with the growth of that country versus the growth of other countries in the world. Whether it's a flight to safety type of market or a risk on market. So not all foreign currency risk is the same. Because it's all relative. Sometimes the currency of one country appreciates against the dollar, while at the same time the currency of another country depreciates against the dollar. Okay? There's inflationary risk. Is there going to be out of control inflation in that country? Etc. Now, do you have a question about investing internationally? Investing at all, whatever it is. You can reach me right now on our 24-hour listener line. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. Please call in 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and let's answer a question right now.
Hey, guys. How's it going? This is JT over in Florida. I love the show. I've got a quick question. So my little strategy is I've been setting aside about $2,000 a month to purchase shares of whatever particular stock I have researched and figured that I should buy that month. I'm doing it $2,000 at a time. So at $10, I'm at 50 basis points on the cost. I was wondering if, am I doing it with too little of an amount or over time? I mean, it's really not that high of a percentage of cost. I'm buying them now and holding them, you know, indefinitely. So thank you. Love the show. Thanks a lot.
That's a great way to think about it. Think about your what he's talking about is commission costs, and he's buying individual stocks, $2,000 a pop. I'm sure roughly, I'm sure it's not exactly $2,000 every time, but every time he's making the transactions, costs him $10 because that's what his broker charges him. And what's $10 on $2,000? Well, that's 0.5%. So it's costing him 0.5% to get in. And that's about where I like it at the most, around that area as 0.5% to get into a particular position. You know, this is why we talk about we like to, when we invest for clients, all of our clients typically have over $100,000 if we're buying them individual stocks and individual bonds, because there's commissions to that, right? Not that we're getting, we don't get commissions, but our broker gets commissions. Our client's broker gets commissions. And if you're under $100,000, you should really look at no-load funds. Because to trade them, get in and out, doesn't cost anything. And so when we're looking at $100,000, typically our normal purchase of a particular position is 3% of a portfolio. What's 3% of $100,000? That's $3,000. Now, our trading costs are lower than the typically lower than the $10 a trade, but you know, you're looking at that $3,000 per trade. You know, that's when you start getting that low percentage to get in. So I think of it the same way, and you should as well. Everyone out there should think about that. And why for smaller accounts, no load, no transaction fee mutual funds, which we use for those smaller accounts, makes sense. But for larger accounts, once you get over $100,000, so if you ever get talked into buying mutual funds and you have over $100,000, some advisor is going to throw you in some mutual funds. They're probably just kind of taking orders from the top. They're not really advisors. They're just lackeys. And that's what happens almost always at these big brokerage firms. So don't buy into them. They just want to make their little commissions. Now, our program is brought to you by KPP Financial. We offer a variety of carefully designed investment programs designed to meet a range of needs and retirement goals. If you'd like to know more about them, just click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com.
Hi, Steve and Justin. I was calling in on Realty Investment Trust stock. It's the symbol is ADC, Agree Realty Corp. I wanted to see what would be a good entry point and whether this would be a suitable investment for an IRA account. A great show that you have, and I'll be listening to hear your thoughts. Thank you.
Well, REITs are pretty good investments for retirement accounts because they are taxed at your ordinary income tax rate. And but if you hold them within a tax deferred account, you're not paying that tax. So it is generally good to own REITs within a tax deferred account like an IRA or a 401k. Now, ADC is Agree Realty Corp. This is a REIT that develops, acquires, and owns 278 retail properties leased to national tenants in 41 states. It's had a huge, huge run. It's very, very overbought. It was up about 5% today. I'm trying to see if there's any news on it because this thing has really taken off. It's certainly not cheap at these levels. Yields about 4%. It is paying out about 88% of its earnings, which is necessary for a REIT because they must pay 90% of their cash flow. Their cash dividend payout ratio is negative 23%, meaning they're not producing positive cash flow to cover that dividend, which means they're adding to their total liabilities. Which keeps going up and up and up, which is kind of at an all-time high. Excuse me, and that worries me a little bit. I think this is high risk, and I don't like it because it's in retail. And I think there's going to be large disruptions in the retail market in the near future because of Amazon, and you're seeing the pressure on a lot of retailers. And I don't know enough about this and diversity of their tenants and who leases out their properties. Maybe it's a stronger retailer than, you know, the Macy's or JCPenney's of the world. But, you know, I think you kind of missed the boat on this. You know, it's gone from the mid to high 20s to 47 in the span of 9 months. That's a huge, huge move. And I think it's just overvalued at these levels. It's very profitable. I like that. It's got okay cash flow, but it's I don't love it. I just think it's too expensive. I think you missed the boat, and it's just doesn't have that appeal because of the sector. All right, now whether it's buying or selling stocks or real estate, we're here to help you solve your money challenges, whatever it is. No question is too complex. No question is too simple. Give us a call. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us directly right now. Call sooner rather than later. We have about 40 minutes left on the show, but do it now. Anytime, right now, live, you can talk to us 4 to 5 Pacific time every weekday. Let's go to Art in Menlo Park. How are you doing, Art?
Good, Justin. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it.
Yeah, I was just wondering, about CF Industries. I was actually thinking about selling out because it's dropped from what I got it at, which was about 27. Now it's down to about 24. I'm just wondering if you'd think about getting out or possibly just waiting for a bump back up a little bit.
Well, why'd you buy it?
Well, I was actually waiting for a turnaround in the fertilizer, you know, business. Mm-hmm. But from what I've been reading, it it's further out than I thought.
Okay.
So I was actually thinking about, you know, just getting out because it's already down 10% or a little bit over 10% at this point.
Okay. So your original thesis of the fertilizer market will turn around is you're starting to question it.
Right.
And you're questioning
from
that
what I've been
because of what you read, not because CF has fallen, right?
Well, yes.
Okay. Well, then yeah, I would get it. If you don't believe in that thesis anymore, then yes, I would get out. Now, me personally, I do actually believe in that thesis. Now, it may not be, you know, tomorrow or next month, but I do think it's around the corner. And so we did recently purchase a competitor or a stock and company that is very similar to CF Industries. I won't tell you which one, but we have, and that's one of the reasons why I would probably say hold on to CF. CF wasn't our first choice. It was another company in this industry. But I like it. I do think that things are depressed, and I think prices will turn around. And you're seeing that in agricultural prices that are starting to really go up. You look at like DBA, which is an ETF that tracks the agricultural industry. It's really, really taken off recently. And we think companies like CF and others in the agricultural space will do well.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Justin.
No problem, Mark. Hey, if you think, however, that I'm wrong, then you sell it. I could be wrong. I'm always open to that possibility. I can be wrong. And I have been wrong. And if you think there's somebody out there that hasn't, you're wrong. All right. So let's go to our main talking point today. And it's about stocks and them being expensive. And really, if you look at it, stocks are as expensive as they've been in the past 7 years. Now, if you go back to mid-February when the market was down double digits on the year, the S&P was trading at about 15.2 times forward earnings. Well, we've had a rally and we're back near the highs, and the price to earnings ratio on the S&P is now at 17.5, which is expensive. It's the most expensive it's been since September 2009. Now, it's even more expensive if you look at it from not an earnings per share perspective, but an actual net income perspective. And if you look at net income is back to levels that we have not seen since 2011. Now you're saying, how is that true? Well, earnings per share is up. Well, yes, earnings per share is up, but net income is back to levels not seen since 2011. And the reason is because of buybacks. Companies are executing financial engineering. They're borrowing billions of dollars, leveraging up their balance sheet, which makes them more risky and the overall financial system more risky. And they're buying back the shares. They're reducing their share count. That doesn't help net income, but it does help earnings per share. So stocks are expensive. They continue to be expensive. Earnings are in decline. I did attend the Chapman Economic Forecast yesterday, which is all my alma mater, one of the most accurate forecasters in the country from a university. And I'm going to get to what they said maybe later this show. If not, Steve will talk about it tomorrow. But I'll give you a little hint. They're seeing signs of a recession on the horizon. It's not there yet, but they're seeing signs of it. Now, that was our main talking point today, and you know, we've talked about it in a while. Shares are expensive, stocks are expensive generally, but there are select opportunities, okay? But there are other talking points I want to get to. One is about IPOs. Do you understand the IPO process? Do you? I want to get to that. I think it's important to understand that because people get excited about them, but you should understand what they mean and how they work. I also want to talk about Walmart. They're offering a free trial of their new Amazon Prime killer. It's called Shipping Pass. What is that? Is it going to work? And then banks. They had the stress test today. What are some positives that are helping banks? And what are all the negatives? And there are multiple. So we're going to talk about that. Now's the time to call with your question or share your investing experiences. Call our anytime line and record your question at 888-99-CHART, or you can send a note directly to me. Just click on the Contact Justin button on investtalk.com.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Join our InvestTalk Insiders program and gain access to a whole range of special reports and one-page info sheets on important money topics like managing a bond portfolio. Fixed income offers a lot of value points that equities do not. Read all about it. Become an InvestTalk Insider on investtalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab. We continue now with this Wednesday, June 29th, Invest Talk. Many investors looking for something different look to real estate investment trusts. But then the options can be confusing. Sorting out the array of REITs. That's our main talking point on the next Invest Talk. But we're still dealing with today. Join in. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. This is Bruce from New York. I bought the semiconductor company Skyworks Solutions, symbol SWKS, at 82. I liked its strong balance sheet, good ROE, and has no debt. I also thought its low PE made it almost look like a value stock instead of a growth stock, so I thought it was cheap. I guess I was wrong. What do you think of the midterm prospects of SWKS? Thanks again for a great show. Bye-bye.
All right, he's looking at Skyworks Solutions. This is a big smartphone chip supplier. They have some chips in the iPhone and other devices, many other types of devices throughout the tech space. And they were growing dramatically, and the revenue was up 50%+ back in late 2014. Earnings were up almost 100%. Around that time frame as well. Now, last quarter, revenue was only up 2% and earnings were up 9%. So this is a good example of a high-flying growth stock that is started to have growth slow, and that pushed the stock from a high of around $106 or so to now at $61. So it's down pretty dramatically from that high, not quite 50%, but 40% plus, and it did hit about $55 a share in the sell-off earlier in the year, in the mid-February, and it's bounced back a little bit, but not nearly what the market's done. So it's been relatively weak. I like the company long-term, so I think you'll be fine if you have a 5 to 10 year time horizon. But you know, as we slip into this bear market, which is likely on the horizon, you're gonna probably see more downside in names like Skyworks, and it's much cheaper than it was at 106. But I wouldn't say it's a bargain at these levels. I would say it is on the cheap side, but it's not a bargain by any means. I would need to see it like in the 30s for it to me say, oh, this is a bargain. Is going to get there? Maybe. I would say I would buy more slowly as you see a dip, because if it's your time horizon is long term. Now, if you want to think you're going to trade this back to 80, I don't know if it gets there in this cycle. I think you have it'll continue down with the broad strokes of the market. and you'll find a fantastic buying opportunity during this coming bear market. But you got to have a longer time horizon and understand there's going to be a lot of volatility and be prepared for that volatility. If you're not a an aggressive investor and you don't have a strong stomach, then this isn't in the name for you. So you have to understand the type of risk you're taking. Its beta is 1.66, so it's going to be two-thirds more volatile than the overall market. Does yield 1.7%, so as you're adding shares and you're waiting, you're going to get a nice dividend, and there's a lot of room for that dividend to grow. And I would imagine they will increase that dividend because, like you said, they have a strong balance sheet, they have good cash flow. So I like it. You just have to be patient and wait for it to come back and buy the dips in this name. All right, now let's talk about IPOs. I get this a lot. People get excited about them. There's a cool story around the name, especially in today's world when most of them tend to be tech companies. And there, from time to time, there have been very successful IPOs. And most people will talk about the Googles of the world or the Visas of the world. Those are the IPOs that they'll point to how much money you can make. What you don't realize is that most IPOs aren't great deals. They really aren't. And why is that? Well, you have to think of the notion of what's happening. The insiders are selling. Well, when are the insiders going to sell? They're going to sell when it's advantageous to them, not to the investor. Okay? Now, what you have to understand about the IPO process is that it's virtually impossible for the average investor to ever be included in the good deals. And if you are offered an IPO as an individual investor, you should run the other direction. And why is that? Well, let's talk about the process. Well, the process when a company goes public is that they go to an investment bank to facilitate the sale of the shares, because they don't know how to round up all the investors to buy the shares. So the investment bank does it. So the investment bank is the middleman between the company and the big investors. And the investment bank will get a fee percentage of how much capital they're raising. Now, these big investment banks have deep relationships with some of the largest money managers in the world, mutual funds, hedge funds, pension funds, etc. And the companies don't have these relationships, the banks do. So bankers initially target these big institutional investors because they can buy large amounts of stock. And they tend to be long-term holders as long as they buy into the story of the company and they believe in the strategic direction of it. Now, once the bank compiles a list of potential buyers, they travel all over, they talk to management of these big institutions. They call it the roadshow. And the purpose is to drum up demand for the stock. If they're interested, they'll give the bank a large order of a specific amount of stock. They'll say, we're going to buy $15 million worth of stock. And they say, at this price. Now, there's a balance between where they price the IPO, because they're supposed to get the most for the company that hired them. They also don't want to have it so high that it damages relationships with their investors, who they keep going back to over and over to buy these IPOs. Now, if demand is lower than expected, what happens? Well, they usually go to their brokerage arm, which talks to the average investor. And their brokerage arm will dupe them into saying, oh, this is a great IPO. You should buy some shares. Well, if it gets to that point, it means all the big, knowledgeable institutions out there didn't want to buy it or didn't want to buy enough. So they're going to push it to you, the average investor. So said another way, the only time the average person gets offered a part of an IPO is when big, sophisticated investors with teams of very intelligent people and seasoned professionals who are paid big money to evaluate these type of investment opportunities didn't like the deal and they passed. So that's a lesson on the IPO process. Now it's time for Invest Talk Personal. These are the day-to-day financial choices that can have a lasting impact on you over the long term. Now, Yahoo Finance posted a worthwhile piece written by Jeff Rose. It's called The 11 Financial Behaviors You Don't Want Your Kids to Learn from You. We all have bad financial habits. I know I do. Everyone does. No one's perfect. So what's that list? One is operating without a budget. So easy these days with Mint.com and so many tools out there that allow you to create a budget. It's not that hard. You know, most people use credit cards or debit cards for transactions. You have records of it, so you know kind of what you spend on. Create a budget. It's not that hard. Number two, debt is your friend. Well, it's not. Wealthy people earn interest. They don't pay it. That's what my grandpa always said. Number three, if our friends have it, we need it. You know, keeping up with the Joneses. You don't. Spend more money on trips and great experiences. You'll be happier, trust me. Number four, credit cards are a way of life. So many people rely on credit cards, and, you know, I know it's easy. But it's a habit everyone should try to break. Number five, you deserve the best things in life. Don't feel entitled. If you have the money, then yes, you deserve it. If you've taken care of all your priorities, which is saving for retirement, saving for a rainy day, saving for your child's education, all the important things, then and you have money left over? Sure. You've worked hard enough. You've earned it. You deserve it. But don't feel entitled. Number six, never talk about money. People don't like talking about it. It's an emotional thing. I understand that. But I think we can learn from each other's experiences of what you did right, what you did wrong. You know, that's why we're here, talking to you every day. Talking about money. Because when you talk it out, you understand the pros and the cons of each type of money decision, and you can avoid the cons and hopefully maximize the pros. Number seven, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Basically, you live for today only. And, you know, there's something to be said about that. But you don't want to only focus on today. You want to have at least some notion of how you're going to live comfortably tomorrow, not just today. Number eight, not setting savings or investing goals. If you don't have a goal, you're not going to achieve it. If you don't have something specific that I want to save X amount, the odds of you getting to that savings goal are extremely low. Because you have no roadmap. If you have a goal, you can create a roadmap. That's what we do for clients. We see their goals, assess their goals, help them create a roadmap. Same thing what you need to do. Number nine, always take advantage of a sale. I see this a lot. You know, it's something's on sale. I'm going to be saving money. No, you're still spending money. You always have to ask yourself, do you need that? It's great to take advantage of a sale, but it needs to be something you need that you're going to use. And this is something I learned. This is a habit I had, and I've started to break it over the past 3 to 5 years. When I was young, you know, oh, that's a great deal. Didn't have a lot. I was young, you know, still getting out of college, still building things. And I realized a lot of the stuff I got on sale, thought was a good deal. Whether it's clothes, just kind of sat in my closet. Or just kind of sat in storage or whatever. So make sure if you're going to spend money and you think you're getting a great deal, that you're going to use it, not just once, but use it multiple times. Number 10, keeping financial secrets, especially from the people that are close to you, significant other, that usually sets yourself up for disaster. Then number 11, pretending that financial habits don't affect your health. They do. Financial stress has a large impact on your health. So if you're not, if you don't have your house in order, it's going to affect your waistline. It affects a lot in your life. So don't ignore it. And what's more important than your health? Don't think the two are completely separate. They are related. Right? Now that's Invest Talk Personal. We have a link to this article right under our talking point on investtalk.com. Now, do you have a comment about this topic? Your personal experiences, whatever it is, give us a call. Share it right now at 888-99-CHART.
If you have a question about our talking point, is the stock market too expensive now? There's a link to a related article on our website homepage, or you can send a note. To do that, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin, and they will get back to you.
Hey, Steve, my name is Rich from Columbia, South Carolina, and I'd be really curious. By the way, I'm a podcast listener. I'd be really curious to hear your take on Colfax. Their symbol is CFX. Thanks.
This is a company I haven't heard of. Usually I hear of most companies. This is Colfax. This is an industrial company, and they're fairly diversified. They manufacture gas fluid handling and fabrication technology products for marine oil and gas and power generation. $3 billion company, obviously on the decline because of what's going on in the oil patch. They rallied a little bit, but I don't like the strength of this rally. They don't seem to be holding that strength very well. No dividend, modest amount of debt, so you know I'm not too worried about that whole debt situation. Doesn't seem too dramatic. Still positive cash flow. I like that. It's almost cheap enough. I don't like the return on equity. It's always been kind of sloppy all over the place, not consistent. Some years it's negative. Some years it's positive 13%. It's kind of all over the place. I don't like that. Trading right at book value, which is good, assuming they don't have a lot of intangible assets that may be mispriced on their balance sheet. It's in a downtrend. I don't like that strength. It has good cash flow. I like that. I just don't think it's cheap enough. I think it needs to get much cheaper. And when I say much cheaper, I'm talking teens. If it get back into the mid to low teens, then I would say, okay, it's cheap enough. But not at these levels, at $25 now. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein, and we have time to get your question in before our hour is up. We have 10 minutes left. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hey, Steve and Justin. My name is Tom. I'm a listener from New York. Wanted to know your thoughts on ticker LGND for a long-term position. I wanted to know if it's a good time to buy and if you like the company or not. Thanks, and I love the show.
All right, he's looking at Ligand Pharmaceuticals. They develop pharmaceuticals in the areas of oncology, central nervous system, inflammation, and blood disorders. Their earnings have gone up dramatically. They were losing a bunch of money through 2012, and starting in 2013, they started making money, and now next year, they're supposed to make $5.03 a share, which is up 52% from this year, which they're supposed to make $3.30 a share. Last year, they only made $3.27, so that's going to be a big jump, and they saw a big jump in first quarter earnings, up 103%. So I kind of believe that to a degree. Their cash flow is nice and positive, but it's not so high that it warrants this valuation. So I'd say it's a little expensive, but you're paying up for that growth. What worries me the most is the sector. I don't know much about their drugs. It's hard to know much about their drugs. I like their profit. I like the vector of this company. The issue is, will the crackdown on the drug industry and the prices that they're able to charge for drugs, is that going to weigh on a name like this? I would have to understand their drugs. Are their drugs high priced or are they low? So will they be a victim of the crackdown on all these drug companies just jacking up prices? Or have they not done any of that, and so this growth is not driven by price increases? So I don't know. I don't know. This is a pharmaceutical company. It's a biotech company. It's extremely hard to gauge that. So, you know, I can't give you a really conclusive answer. I have to really know about these drugs that they have, how they made this growth. I like the trajectory. I like where I'm looking at. The problem is the sector, and I think it's going to bleed into all the biotechs, not just this company. Now I want to talk quickly about Walmart. Yesterday they came out with their answer to Amazon Prime. And studies have shown that about a third of all adults are Amazon Prime subscribers. So this is one reason why the brick and mortar stores are getting killed. Why? Because it's so easy to just jump on Amazon and buy it. Free two-day shipping, usually most things you want. You don't need faster than 2 days anyway. Some things are delivered overnight for free as an Amazon Prime subscriber. So Walmart realizes this, and so they've launched what's called Shipping Pass, and they're trying to compete. They know that they need to compete, and they can because they have the cash flow, they have the pricing structure. They can be, I think, an even better Amazon if they execute it on it right. And this is their step to do it. It's $50 a month. They're giving you a free 30-day trial if you sign up. Starts Friday. And it's free two-day shipping. No minimum orders. Costs $49 a year. Amazon Prime costs $99 a year. Now, in the most recent quarter, Walmart reported global e-commerce sales rose 9%. Well, Amazon Prime sales were up double that. So, this is their attempt. And their smart attempt. And this goes back to what I talk about with management. Why it's important to understand the management of a company when you're doing research. Because good management will pivot and recognize that what they're doing is not working. Or isn't working as well as another strategy could. And Walmart is clearly figure that out. They see the direction of retail in this country. They know that more and more people are going to shop online. It's just the way it is. Technology is transforming our world. And Walmart is smart enough to try to pivot. Now, will they succeed? They might not. But at least they recognize it and they're pivoting, and that is what's most important. Now, the time to close it up for the day. Before we go, a reminder to try our free risk analysis tool. It measures your risk tolerance, and it only takes about 3 minutes to put together your risk profile and assigning a value of 1 to 99. Kind of like your speed limit for investing. And then, if you wish, we can help you determine the mix in your current retirement portfolio and see if they match up. If they don't, that's an issue. We can help you with that. It's free. It's right there on investtalk.com. Click on the Invest Talk tab. I'm Justin Klein, Executive Vice President of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. Let's meet up again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.